Okay, I received a sad letter today. It's from someone who simply calls themselves Anonymous Loving Father. Now, this father has a son. His son is an adult, and his adult son is a drug user. He was found to have drugs on his possession at a music festival last year. However, instead of going before a court, he was given what is called a diversion order. Anyway, the son apparently has not learned his lesson, is still taking drugs, still employed, by the way, but still taking drugs on a daily basis. And the father, the anonymous loving father, feels that if the son had gone before a magistrate, faced court, possibly been convicted and maybe even been jailed, it would have taught him a very, very valuable lesson. Joining me on the line now, Magistrate of the Drugs Court, Tony Parsons. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Tell me, I didn't realise we had a specific drug court. Is this like a subsidiary of the Magistrate's Court?
It's a division of the Magistrate's Court. It's been around since 2002. The Attorney General of the Braxton Brumby government set it up at that time. It's modelled on the drug courts that were started in America in the 1980s. In the States now, there's something like 2,700 drug courts, and they're in 13 other countries. So it's a jurisprudence that's been around for a long time, a quarter of a century. It's demonstrated to be very effective dealing with the hard end of the criminal justice system drug user. So we've got our own in Dandenong.
Okay, well, look, you heard my summary of this letter I have in front of me from a man who calls himself Anonymous Loving Father. He says his son is a regular drug user. He has been caught with drugs. He was only given a diversion order, and he reckons that he perhaps should have gone in front of someone like you and been properly punished.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, as a father of a teenager, I sympathise with him. But I think that we just need to step back and have a look at some of the facts. And the facts are that very many young people, young adults, do use drugs, socially, recreationally, however you want to describe it. And they do so without destroying themselves or their families or their communities. And they give up and stop eventually. So they're the facts. It's only when people become seriously dependent and turn to crime and completely unacceptable social, antisocial behaviour that they become really problematic and come before the courts.
Yeah.
So I feel very sorry for him, but I want to encourage him to have hope that this is not necessarily the bleak end that we see so often described in the media. The prevailing wisdom amongst the courts and the police and the many drug and alcohol agencies in the community is that we should, as a community, do everything we can to divert people away from the criminal justice system, not pull them into it. Because once we pull them into it, they become infected by hardened criminals and the system, and they're more likely to learn the craft of crime and deeper drug abuse than turn away from it.
Okay, well, can I ask you about that? Because this is where I sort of hit for me what is a bit of a, almost like a philosophical stumbling block. I mean, my personal viewpoint is that drugs should be legalised, that in fact we would, the social harm that's caused by drug use is, in my view, outweighed by all the innocent people who get their homes and their cars broken into, who have syringes littering beaches and having kids step on them, that if we could legalise drugs, we'd get rid of that. But I mean, I also believe in following the law, and our criminal law passed by the Parliament of Victoria, which you and I and everybody else has to obey, says that possession and use of drugs is illegal. Now, how can we sort of, how is it that a court like yours and the police can sort of conveniently ignore that rather inconvenient fact?
Well, I don't think they ignore it. Clearly, drug possession, use, trafficking is illegal. But we have a drug response strategy in the state of Victoria that's modelled on the Commonwealth strategy. There's three pillars of that drug response strategy. One is to reduce supply, and that's where the police do their best work. One is to reduce demand, and that's what the educational institutions should do. And the third is to reduce the harm. Now, you're quite right. They are illegal substances, but if we were to drive users of drugs underground using the full force of the criminal law, they would lose touch with the therapeutic community, the agencies that are there to help them, and we wouldn't achieve harm minimisation today.
But then why don't we change the criminal law? Because again, I mean, you're an officer of the court. I mean, you are sworn, I believe, to uphold the law. I know that barristers and solicitors have to make similar commitments. I mean, if the law is saying one thing, that use of this drug is illegal, but on the other hand, we're treating it more like a medical and a harm minimisation issue, doesn't the law have to be changed? Shouldn't we grasp the nettle a bit on this?
Look, I think there's a certain rational logic to your position. I'm, as you say, a judicial officer, and it's not my role to tell governments how to respond. But in our sworn oath to uphold the law, we have to also, as part of that oath, take into consideration the rehabilitation of the person committing the crime, and that's any crime, not just drug use. And so it's perfectly consistent with our oath in applying the law that we do what we can to encourage rehabilitation. But, you know, I think the point you make is a very sound one, because there are those inconsistencies in terms of treatment responses and the criminal law. Nevertheless, this is the way the criminal law has been operating in this state for as long as it's been in existence.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't like things that are a grey area. You know, I think our abortion law is rather grey. I think our approach to drugs is grey. I mean, I don't expect you to comment on a real life case, but I'm just going to map it out. I mean,
sure.
Former AFL footballer Carmichael Hunt is about to face a court to see if he's going to be charged with cocaine possession and possible trafficking.
Yeah.
Now, under the AFL's rules, if a player is caught using drugs, they until they've done it three times, they keep it quiet. They have this three strikes rule. However, the Queensland Police has obviously run some sort of operation. It seems that Carmichael Hunt's name has come up.
Yeah.
So the AFL has one way of dealing with drugs, and the police in this circumstance has another way of dealing with drugs. I mean, they do not have a three strikes policy. Again, to me, this is inconsistent. You've got one of the major sporting bodies of the land having one policy, a police force in Australia having a different one. Your court, again, slightly at odds with its own law that it's supposedly sworn to uphold. I don't see why we can't sort of have that rational, logical approach and say, righto, what do we really think about drug use here?
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely worth the debate. Without wanting to talk about Carmichael Hunt's plight, there seems to me, though, to be a clear distinction between the AFL and the Queensland Police, where there's allegations of trafficking and distribution on the one hand, and a sporting code's response to illicit drug use on the other. So we kind of are talking about different things. But, you know, the points you make are clear, and I think we should have the debate, because I think if we can get a clear understanding of how our response to these situations fits with our policies, we'll get better outcomes.
Finally, Mr. Parsons, what do you think about shooting galleries? Jeff Kennett wrote an article in the Herald Sun last week. I wrote one basically contradicting him. But, I mean, he says we should now consider legalised or, I don't know, state-approved shooting galleries in which people would shoot up heroin. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, look, again, it's not my position to tell the government what to do, but I can't say, Tom, that there is a medically supervised safe injecting facility in King's Cross.
That was Mr. Kennett's example.
Yeah, been the venue of over a quarter of a million injecting events since it opened 10 years ago, and there's been not one death. And I know it's publicly supported by the police and the emergency services in the King's Cross area. They're not getting complaints about users using in the streets. They're not rushing off in emergency vehicles to revive people who've overdosed and collapsed in the streets. So it's not an easy debate, and it's not an easy discussion for government. I happen to live in Richmond, so, you know, like you and other residents in Yarra, we see the pointy end of current policies, and it's tragic, and I don't think there are any answers that are simple, but I think that the debate should be had because, you know, there are things working in other jurisdictions that we might be able to learn from.
Tony Parsons, Magistrate of the Drug Court, I really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
Tony Parsons there. It's not easy to get magistrates to come on and talk about things like this because normally they're fairly private people, so we do appreciate the fact that he's come on. But, you know, it seems to me that policies, and I say policies plural because they vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, from state to state, from sporting code to sporting code, they're a mess. We can't seem to decide, are drugs legal or illegal? Are they medical or criminal? Should we have shooting galleries or not? Should the drug use of sporting stars be kept secret, as the AFL does, or made public, like the Queensland Police seems to do? Confusing, isn't it?